This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, one of my favorite sources of news and information in journalism is ProPublica, and hopefully it is becoming or has become yours as well. Our guest today covers healthcare, public health, and the environment for ProPublica's South Unit. He was previously an independent journalist working with Georgia Health News as part of ProPublica's local reporting network, a collaboration that has investigated Georgia Power's toxic waste disposal practices, racial disparities in COVID-19 deaths, and a controversial loophole to fund nursing homes. His work has appeared in a variety of national publications, including The Atlantic, The New York Times, and Politico, Time Magazine, The Washington Post, Stat, Stateline, where he covered healthcare as a Southern correspondent. He has also worked as a staff writer for CNN, Atlanta Magazine, and the Atlanta Alt-Weekly Creative Loafing. His story about a death row doctor who built an empire from treating Georgia inmates won the SPJ Green Eyeshade Award for investigative reporting in 2020. So he knows of which he writes and he knows of which he covers. We're happy to have him with us now to talk about his latest piece, The Tragedy of North Birmingham. Max Blau joins us now. Max, welcome to Make It Plain. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. How are you today?
Just fine. It's a pleasure to have you, in fact. So we want to talk about Birmingham, Alabama. Of course, this is another example of environmental justice, if not environmental racism. Talk to us, and we're going to learn something today because I've never heard of this before. This fuel, there's a fuel that is named Coke. And let's start there and tell us what that fuel is.
Coke is a fuel that has for generations been used by the iron and steel making process in this country and beyond. The way coke is made is you take lumps of coal and you put them into an oven and they burn at very hot temperature for hours on end. And ultimately the process of making coke allows steel mills and iron furnaces to make those metals into everything from cast iron pipes to skyscraper I-beams. And, you know, much of modern America is, you know, is built with the help of Coke. If you think about it, I had never heard of Coke before tackling the story and spending time in Birmingham. It is, I think, when people think of places like Pittsburgh, as well as the south side of Chicago along Gary, Indiana, and you think of the heavy, intense pollution that comes from industry. The burning of coal to make coke is a major part of that. I just think most of the time people see coke pollution as part of the steel pollution that exists in certain areas.
And so this is what North Birmingham is faced with, correct? And if from what you're reporting, an extraordinary amount of pollution from a plant that is not preventing the community from being exposed to toxic chemicals and toxic waste, correct?
That's correct. If you were to go take a drive down to or up to the north side of Birmingham, you would find the one particular, there are two coke plants, but the one I'm writing about is called the commonly known as the 35th Avenue Coke Plant. And it is in the heart of three historic Black communities on the city's north side. And this plant has been in operation for over a century. And the origins of it date back to the earliest days of Birmingham. And in the course of my investigation of this plant and its impact of the toxic air pollution and soil contamination that had happened in the surrounding communities, I tell the story of the plant's full history dating back to the earliest years of the city.
What are some of the effects of this pollution on the community? These are cancer causing agents, are they not?
That's correct. Within the plumes of thick black smoke that rise from leaks in these coke plant ovens, there's smoke that contains tiny particles such as benzene or PAHs that are cancer-causing chemicals and that elevate cancer risk to people over many years of exposure. And then in this community, which is also a Superfund site, these communities which are part of a Superfund site, there have been levels of multiple cancer-causing chemicals, including PAHs, arsenic, and lead found in the soil. And those are also elevated, can cause serious harm to people over the course of many years if exposed to them.
You mentioned a bit about the history of this industry in Birmingham. After the Civil War, you write that some of these jobs in ironworking, freed African-Americans had these jobs. They were hard jobs for low pay. This was somewhat of an extension of working in this industry, was it not? This was somewhat of an extension of the plantation culture, if not some form of well, I guess it wasn't sharecropping, but it was, I guess, just a step above enslavement, was it not?
Absolutely. After the end of the Civil War, the South was lay in ruins, and Birmingham, which was founded in 1871, was built with the idea of, on the basis of industrialists coming in to tap into rich deposits of natural resources around the area, including coal and other minerals. And the hope was by building a industrial hub in the heart of the South could create a kind of make this shift from the agriculture-based economy that, slavery played a key part of into an industrial era, modern era that could ultimately someday compete with cities like Pittsburgh or Chicago. And during this, you know, there were, during Reconstruction, you had formerly enslaved Black, particularly men, who left rural parts of Alabama and headed to Birmingham to seek opportunities at various industrial plants, including ones that had coke ovens. However, the historians have likened this period not as necessarily a new opportunity, but as a evolution of the exploitative labor practices that existed before the Civil War and during the Civil War. One historian in particular referred to Birmingham by the 1880s as a iron plantation in an urban setting.
Yeah, yeah. And they also did convict leasing too, didn't they? When it came,
there were in the days before this coke plant opened. The coke plant was part of a major of a larger corporate expansion, if you will, around the end of the World War One. But the convict leasing, in particular, happened by the same company to coal mines that really provide coal to be burned at these coke plants.
You also chart, and this kind of stands out to me, folks, if for those of us who think environmental concerns are relatively new, just want to lift this up. In 1913, from Max's article, 1913, over 100 years ago, city commissioners banned companies from firing up their plants more than 3 minutes an hour. You mean to tell me even 100 years ago, there were concerns, there were these types of environmental concerns, and we're still fighting this?
It's, while people may not have known the full science of how chemicals that I described earlier could cause cancer, smoke, you know, was a constant problem that impacted people's lives in terms of their respiratory issues, as well as from an economic perspective. If you lived or owned a business in the area near a plant, you were constantly having to spend money to clean up your property, which would be discolored by the soot that would be falling on it. So there was a lot of, it ranged from economic nuisance to serious health issues. But in places like Birmingham, and this is true of cities that I've been in elsewhere across the South, the smell and the sight of these chemicals, industry sort of framed it to the people who worked at these plants as like the smell of money or the sight of industrial progress. And so while there were people going back over a century that were concerned about the health implications and of this pollution, industry used this influence to not only try to stop more regulations from happening, but also tried to reframe it as a problem that was a side effect of making lots of money and making Birmingham a major industrial titan in the South.
Yeah, and to make it, I mean, those southern towns wanted to in some respect, become bigger towns on the map, more relevant. And you're right, become, you know, big cities, if you will. It's interesting, folks, in Max's writing, he contrasts. Those, we all, when we think of Birmingham, we think of the civil rights struggle. And Max so poignantly write how, while there were those African-Americans, some of whom either worked at the coke plants or had families at the coke plants, while they were fighting to desegregate downtown and other areas of public life in Birmingham, there was sort of an environmental segregation going on under the radar. white families moving to places with cleaner air. Black families couldn't relocate themselves to places with cleaner air, right?
Yeah. I mean, one of the most fascinating parts of diving into this history for me is, you know, I live 2 hours away from Birmingham in Atlanta. Now, a lot of the time I think about the reasons why Birmingham and Atlanta went on two different paths. Why Birmingham in the late 20th century stopped growing, and why Atlanta became the seen as a Black Mecca in the South, and also a city that was worthy of hosting an Olympics and having this international prestige around its reputation, around its growth and development. And I think so many people, when they think about Birmingham, you think of Bull Connor, you think of the dogs being unleashed and attacking kids, and the fire hoses. Like, those images are in the bombing that killed four girls at 16th Street Baptist Church. But while those things in the minds of families that lived in North Birmingham, you know, may have been the more immediate threat at the time, often lost in the broader history of Birmingham, is this intersection of how people were living under the shadow or in all this smoke that was happening and all this harmful air pollution at the same time of these iconic and notorious moments in our nation's history.
Yeah, that's important to know.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And even during that time, not only was George Wallace fighting desegregation, he wasn't exactly moving with all deliberate speed to deal with this toxic pollution. The EPA had to step in, right?
Yeah, the EPA, which in 1971, a year or so after it was founded, had to intervene because there was a public health crisis that was happening because of the immense amounts of pollution being emitted into the air. And so the EPA came in large part because the state and Governor Wallace had not done enough to clamp down or address the problem. They temporarily forced nearly two dozen industrial plants to shut down until the air pollution subsided. And that moment is like one of the, it's a really one of the first times the EPA ever steps into a city and oversteps the local or state powers there to enforce environmental controls and take that kind of action.
In terms of where things are today in Birmingham, is there a raised level of awareness around this toxicity? Where do things stand? What is there movement on the ground to address it?
I think it is hard to talk to people in these North Birmingham communities without concerns about their health coming into picture. It is both true that over many years, America's air quality has improved because of the EPA and various improvements to the Clean Air Act. But as that has happened, where there are toxic pollutions, pockets of toxic air pollution that remain have stood out and become more pronounced. And those are often in communities like the north side of Birmingham that are either disproportionately communities of color, lower income, or some in cases like North Birmingham, both mostly Black and largely low income. I think one of the things that has helped bring awareness around these problems is not just the ongoing site and understanding of air pollution, but there was the emergence and understanding of how the soil was contaminated in this area really drove a lot of outrage around the way it happened. And so there was a scandal that happened in the mid-2010s where EPA, in their efforts to try and clean up the toxic soil in this area, tried to prioritize the area on a priority list that would have had the potential to accelerate the cleanup and move faster. But there was a corruption scandal that is very complicated that involved companies trying to keep the area off the list in a secret way. And ultimately, there was lawmakers, one lawmaker and other lobbyists who were convicted and went to jail for this. And to a lot of residents there, like this saga, after so many years of air and soil contamination, stopped trusting government because of the way that they were treated and not only disregarded, but in some cases deceived in terms of the way this happened.
Where is the city government right now in regards to this? Where's Mayor Woodfin? There is a health commission that is functioning somewhat too, is there not?
Yeah, in Birmingham, the air pollution is regulated at the federal level by the EPA, which then the local authority that carries that out is the Jefferson County Department of Health. And then the city of Birmingham does not have environmental control as a regulator, but they do have, the mayor is from North Birmingham. It's the issues and the way that the neighborhoods there have been treated are constantly on his mind, as he told me in an interview. And as a result, he has tried to use his pulpit as a mayor to try to achieve some greater form of environmental justice there than what previously has existed.
In fact, he has a plan, doesn't he, called the Big Ask?
That's correct. The Big Ask is a $37 million plan that you can read more about it in my story. As part of that plan, there would be, if it received the funding to back, would allow buyout offers to hundreds of residents who could then move away from pollution if they wanted to. There would also be funding to relocate renters, as well as money to revitalize the community for those who want to stay. And I should note that when you talk to different people in these North Birmingham communities, there's a spectrum of what people want to see happen in the community. There are homeowners who want to cash out but also can't cash out right now because of how suppressed their property values are, in part due to the pollution in this area. And then there are other people who it's the only place they've ever lived in. They can't imagine ever leaving. They're in some cases in their, they're seniors and elders in these communities. And those individuals want to stay, but they want a better quality of life. And so it's a really complicated thing to answer of how do you best serve with this Big Ask and the other plan than everyone in these communities after so many years of disregard and deception.
And Bluestone itself is really not interested in contributing to the Big Ask the way other corporations have done in other places. What they're crying, according to your article, they're even crying a little bit broke when it comes, if I'm correct, when it comes to dealing with cleaning up from some of the current harm in place, right? What are they having, money problems? What's going on with them?
Bluestone has told the EPA that they are unable to cover the, like, there's a regulation that says they have to show that they can, if they were to go out of business, that the cost of covering a certain amount of the cleanup at the site of hazardous waste would still on, and that they couldn't just go bankrupt and then forget about it. But Bluestone's, we haven't gotten the chance to chat about this here yet, but Bluestone Coke is a company that is owned by the family of one of America's wealthiest business empires or most, and it is owned by a man named a family called the Justice family.
Right.
And Justice is at one point was a billionaire who made his money through the coal industry, coal mining in particular, and is currently the governor of West Virginia. And Governor Justice's son, Jade Justice, is the head of Bluestone Coke. And this company, you can find more about this in the story itself, but to summarize it, the company has said it was unable to make basic repairs to its coke ovens and coke plant site that would have prevented air pollution from leaking out and drifting into the nearby communities. And the problems got so bad that Jefferson County Department of Health had to step in and deny the company's request to keep operating. And the plant is currently not producing coke because of pending environmental violations that edged up.
Well, that's good, as a matter of fact. I wonder though, Max, as we look at the nation trying to move away from fossil fuels, but this isn't really for the purpose of fossil fuels. As you said, this is for steel and iron production. Is there, it's not fuel for cars, so to speak, or transportation. Mm-hmm. Are there any alternatives to this type of production for this type of industry, or are we stuck with coke?
There is. So first I'll say this is, coke is part of this dilemma of how do we shift away from fossil fuels, because coke is dirt, it is refined coal, which of course is a fossil fuel. And so while coke plants use less coal, burn less coal than coal-fired power plants do, it is still, you cannot have coke or fossil fuels. In recent decades, steel mills have started to shift away from using coke-fueled plants, and they have what are called electric arc furnaces, which are use a different process. And while they're not, they are more environmentally friendly than coke burning is or coke is, but that is kind of the shift towards that has happened largely because of the increasing pollution regulations that exist in this country. So it's just become it's generally become cheaper and a better investment to be building these newer electric arc furnaces. And however, many of the remaining coke plants are very old, like this one in Birmingham, which is over 100 years old. The plants have had some renovations over years, but largely one of the reasons why delays to these kinds of costly repairs are happening at plants like this one is because companies are trying to preserve the final chapter of revenue from these plants before they shut down.
Yeah. What's been the reaction to your article so far?
I think from hearing from last week or two weekends ago, right after the article came out, drove back to Birmingham to sit in a meeting with residents there, including Mr. Lamar Mabry, who is one of the families that are featured, his family's featured in the story. And I think the story has not only provided more information about the extent to which one of America's wealthiest families had exacerbated the environmental problems there, but it also, the story for the first time published the big ask we've been chatting about, and which had previously been an internal document inside of Birmingham City Hall. So residents are now becoming aware of the fact that the city is trying to build this plan. And I think that information has well, not if, what some people are don't want to place too much faith or hope into that plan because it's not funded yet, are seeing the fact that some of their concerns are being taken seriously as a good sign. On the flip side, it has been, I have not heard anything from the Jefferson County Department of Health or Bluestone itself. At this moment, kind of the big question is that is pending still is whether or not Bluestone is going to be able to reopen someday. And at the moment, one of the findings my story uncovered is that their Jefferson County Department of Health had entered talks to settle those violations I mentioned earlier with Bluestone. And if that happens, Bluestone could pay a relatively small fine compared to what they were facing and make repairs and then be on a pathway to reopening potentially. And so I think residents are watching what is going to happen at those settlement talks and because this plan has been operating for a while, have finally gotten to enjoy healthier, cleaner air than they had in the past. And they are concerned what may happen in the future if the plant reopens.
Why is the settlement so small?
That's a question that the Jefferson County Department of Health did not answer for me. I asked them to explain their, on one hand, to put in the context for listeners, the $850,000 starting point for those negotiations was less than 2% of the $60 million maximum penalties that Bluestone was facing. And that is the $850,000 figure is small compared to other regulator penalties brought against other coke plants in other states, but it is a very large amount for Jefferson County, which historically, according to data that I've obtained, has just not used fines as a major enforcement tool over at least in the past decade and perhaps longer.
And what an incredible story. Folks, we invite you to go to ProPublica.org and read the latest. And this will be also posted on all of our social media and on our podcast platform, the link to the story, The Tragedy of North Birmingham, the author, Max Blau, sharing the story of what's going on down there with this coke plant. Again, coke is a form of fuel, believe it or not. It's something I've learned. And we see these problems are still taking place. Issues of environmental racism, environmental injustice are ongoing. And we're glad we have ProPublica and Max Blau to keep us informed of this. Obviously, Max, you're going to stay on this story, right?
Yeah, I'm working on a follow-up right now, so there'll be more to come.
We'll be on the lookout for that.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Don't forget, folks, ProPublica.org. Let's stay informed. We don't talk about these environmental issues enough. We don't take them seriously enough many times. And Max, I'm sure you're aware of Media Matters work. I frequently have them on the show. And one of the things we talk about is the dearth of coverage for these types of issues when it comes to mainstream media, mainstream print media, cable news networks. We need to be talking about this all of the time so that we're all activated. Lives are being lost. At worst, lives are being altered at best when it comes to environmental pollution, environmental injustice, environmental racism. And we're glad we have nonprofit sources of journalism like ProPublica to bring this to bear. Thank you for joining us on Make It Plain, Max.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for creating space for this really important issue that's playing out in North Birmingham.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.